Hey, Josh.
Hey Nate, how you doing this week?
I'm doing pretty great. I'm feeling a lot more healthy since the last time we spoke. And I've been doing some things around the house, been playing with some things with AI for works. Yeah, having a good week.
Cool.
Are things with you?
Having a good week too. My cold has most has definitely gone a lot further away. Trying to think what else happened this week. I don't know. It's been a little chaotic. We got a newsletter out yesterday we're really happy with, but then I've also been, overly obsessed with open rates. So I've been like looking through ways to clean the list or to find out who's inactive. And I don't know. It's one of those things where you're like, all right, how many bounces should I wait before I just remove them? Stuff like that. So, but no, other than that, yeah, having a pretty good week. It's Friday here, and I guess it's Friday there too. Not really that matters. It's Friday, and yeah, should be doing a little day trip with the kids this Sunday to go to Hershey Park. It's a amusement
Nice.
park in Pennsylvania. So, but that should be fun. But yeah, that's what's going on.
Nice. Wow, it sounds like a good time. So I can tell you've got some ideas of what you want to talk about today.
Yeah, so I've been noodling around. I don't know. I was it's interesting to me how in a certain context, let's say thinking about coding or marketing or writing a landing page or writing an email to a friend or whatever. When most people get like into the craft of whatever that item is, like certain laws emerge, right? Like you kind of are like, I should do this, I shouldn't do that. And then I find it very interesting where there's a law that probably is sounds very what's the word? Like a platitude, right? When someone says it in general, like I'll say one right now. People don't change. Everyone knows that. You're gonna be like, yep, 100%, people don't change. Yeah, it's hard. Change is hard. People don't like to change. And yet, like the number of times we make a mistake when we're in a context that maybe we did not associate that with, but yet it might be a universal truth, and someone says it's so broadly, like people don't change. But yet, like for example, last episode we were talking about, I heard from you from the third party, third person perspective, talking about how challenging it was to talk to QA people and what QA, people in a QA role were a little. I won't put exact words, but in your experience, they tended to be a little more like adverse to new technology and new processes, new things. Now, we can unpack why that is, like motivations and other things, job safety, all these other pieces. But in general, if you end up in a QA career, there's probably a shtick of sorts of like, what is that personality type? And commonly with developers too, like, you can't sell, you have to sell developers a certain way or they never want to get on a demo call. And like these things are true and we figured those out, but then it goes back to like, why are we surprised? It's like, well, you know what? I need to get them on a demo call. I need to get them on a demo call, or I need to convince a QA person that AI is good for them and automation is good for them. And then we go, you know what? But people don't change. So why are we barking up that tree? So
I think a great example of like how people are like all like often behave in a similar way is like you think of like high school cliques or like even like university streams or college streams, right? Like it's like you know the saying of like that guy over there is definitely an engineer or like that girl over there is definitely like in the arts. It's like you can pick these things out even though they're there's always exceptions, but in general you're pretty bang on, right? And so I think you're right. There is definitely like themes, right?
And it's one of those things, and depending on what you're calling it from one side or another, that could be like, hey, a sign of high intelligence is like association and pattern matching, right? But then, on the flip side, on the social side, that's also stereotyping, right? So like, so depending on how you're using it or what you're, stereotyping obviously is usually more in a negative connotation. But this other one is more in like a pattern recognition, but depending on who you're.
So yeah, are you kind of thinking of this pattern recognition in terms of like how we market to people or how we sell to people? Is that kind of how you're thinking of it?
Yes and no. I mean, it's more of the, I'm trying to think of like, why can't, you know, like what are some of these universal truths that just, if I like wrote up on the wall, a list of universal truths, and anytime I was like basically frustrated, I go and read that list and I'm like, is it because of any of these? And just to like, cause my head's, you know, our heads are going to get stuck in a problem like an ostrich, right? So you're banging your head on like, hey, I'm in this QA community. Like you didn't, you weren't thinking about going outside the QA community. You were just thinking of like, I am solving a problem for them and it is good for them. And I need to convince them that it is good for them. Right. Or like they're And it's like, what, if you, you know, 3 points of frustration later, or 3 weeks of banging your head against the wall, if you walked back and read this thing that says people don't change and you put in the words like QA people don't change, you'd be like,
or like people only buy things they want to buy, you know, like something like that.
Right. And I don't know what all of these, you know, are per se, but that's probably a pretty good one, is like people don't change. Right. So, and I almost think of like, if we think of that example and go across other things, other than like you were talking about, let's say, we'll call it like product market fit or something. We'll call it like, you know, essentially you were on the product side. It was like, I'm developing a product and also somewhat marketing, trying to speak to them and understand what those things are. And you realize that actually you're speaking to what you want them to do is an outlier to them. And that's probably not going to end well, or you're always going to be, you know, barking upstream. I would say the one contradiction to that is, if the juice is worth the squeeze, then maybe it doesn't matter, right? So for example, like if convincing one QA person was worth $1 million to you, then it might be like, okay, well, if I just make one, that'll be okay too. But if they're only worth $1 each, it's like, why am I barking up this tree for $1 per thing?
Like that's a tricky thing to try and like come up with a list of, you know, phrases that are universally true, because I think a lot of these things are contextual, right? And like a lot of them is like, if you have a good, maybe,
well,
a
then
good
it's not universal, a universal truth.
Well, yeah, but like there's a lot of useful truths that are contextual, right? Or maybe it's more
so
like,
mostly universal. We'll say mostly
but like, universal.
Okay, so we'll get into kind of picking a few others, but taking this example of people don't change, right? So I've been thinking about it recently from a culture perspective, like and people I work with, right? So it's almost like, you know, let's say there's a person down the street that you want to be friends with, but you realize like you might have different values based on things, maybe, you know, it might be a religion or it might be different things, but to you, it might not matter. Like you're like, I don't care. I don't care what they believe in from a, you know, does God exist or atheist or, you know, whatever else, but it doesn't matter to you for that friendship, but it might matter to them. Right. But you might be barking up the tree being like, I invite them over for a cookout and they just don't come. And it's like, they know what you believe, but you don't care, but you're like barking up that tree. And it's almost like you're kind of annoyed and frustrated. You're like, I don't see what the thing is like, but people don't change. Right. So if it's for him that bothers him enough, maybe you don't know that's the reason, but I'm just saying, let's say you did. After a while you'd get frustrated with that. So again, thinking from a culture and people perspective, I've been thinking about, you know, people I directly work with. And I think I've talked before about sort of my inner circle of like I know I can't manage more than like four people, and four people probably brings me to the brink. And it might be like in terms of like actively working and managing people, right? So three is solid. And I think you talked about sometimes certain people need more attention during different cycles of product or marketing or operations or software development, whatever else. But like, I think about that in terms of, I value collaboration with someone. I value truth seeking. I value, like, I don't care who's right as long as we're working towards getting to the answer. It's not an ego thing for me, but that's actually like a, I think that's a rare thing to find. I've realized that to people that interact with that, a lot of people, like, I might be thinking we're collaborating, but I think you and me, you know me long enough, like, I'm always shouting off ideas, but I could just as easily toss them in the trash.
Right.
But to a person that doesn't feel that way, like, they could feel very
micromanaged.
I would say, like, offended by me, like, because I'm like, ideas, because, well, like, well, what does that say? He's saying he's smarter than me. He's saying like this. He's saying it has to be right. He's telling me I should do this, and I don't want to do that. And I don't like that. That doesn't feel right to me. And I don't want to argue. I don't like arguing, like, all these other things that I don't know. So my point is, I need to find a person likes to collaborate, right? Like, they might say they like to collaborate. And I've done this in the interview process. It's like, I need to find the people that already have the strong beliefs and the strong core values. Otherwise, I can't expect them to change. And if I expect that person to suddenly become a more collaborative and a more truth-seeking and open-minded person, like, I'm going to have a bad time. Like, and they're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. Well, I think that what you're saying has a lot of truth, especially for HR type relationships. Like, people are going to do what they've always done or what they're incentivized to do, right? And they might change slowly over time if you structure the incentives a certain way. But in a lot of times, like, if you, once you get to know what they're about, right, they're, that those core things are really hard to change. Like, it's not, I think you're right in saying that. Because I think when
they're intrinsic motivations, not necessarily even, I wouldn't say even incentives. If there's disincentive, like, incentivizing is like someone that's like, okay, I can kind of, like, I'm on the fence and you can probably pull me in a direction with an incentive.
Yeah. But even I think with certain pay structures and things like that, people can be, you know, pulled in one direction or another. And you can see that when you see people who, like, sometimes in a sales role, right, where they might want to cut corners or something like that because the incentives aren't well aligned for them. But I think you're right in general that, like, yeah, people are going to be who they're going to be and you're not going to be able to change a whole lot. And I think that's actually kind of freeing as a manager or even when you're trying to market to people, because you're not trying to convince them. Instead, you're trying to work within the framework that they're already used to. And so it's comfortable both for them and for you if you can find your way through that, right? Like, it's a lot lower friction. If that makes sense.
Yeah. And just, like, naturally left to their own devices, they're going to gravitate towards the things that are in alignment with you.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's literally the difference of, like, selling lemonade on a hot day versus a cold day, right? It's like, if you sell it on a hot day, people want lemonade on a hot day. And so it's easy. And if you're going to sell it on a cold day, you're going to go around, you know, convincing everybody that they need to have lemonade. It's like, well, that's a make work project, right? And you're not going to win that one.
Right. Right. Yeah. I like that you're kind of leaning into this sort of, like, there's environmental or contextual things. So certain situational things are obviously going to drive someone towards a certain behavior, right? Like, you mentioned the salesperson and for us, again, being bootstrapped, right? Like I think about money very differently than I think, like, a VC backed, you know, potential founder is.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking about it more of, like, hey, I'm thinking long-term. I'm thinking there isn't a way, you know, and almost like, if a person is more incentivized by money, like, to me, that's a short-term thing, right? So, like, for example, for salespeople and people on our front line, it's like, I look for more of, like, their intrinsic motivation is to be a helpful person, right? So, like, so in the long run, that's going to serve us well versus, like, again, going back to the analogy of if a QA person was worth $1 million, like, okay, if that's cool, and then you do want, and it is worth it, you have that guy that is going to go to great lengths to reach that, but you could also comp him appropriately because the QA person is worth $1 million. So if they're going hunting for the one QA person that is not adverse to AI and, like, automation, and I just bring, you know, this as an example, I don't know much truths to this, but then that could work out, right? But if I know, like, for a referral rock, hey, one of these people are only worth, you know, $100, like, it doesn't make sense. And I'd rather have, you know, more people and the right salesperson that's just being helpful, because they're going to have to like talk to more people. And I'd rather have that as a bigger, I would say, value that the brand kind of shows.
Mm-hmm. So do you have more of these universal truths, or is there just this one that you're really stuck on? Because like this one I can see has a lot of legs, but like.
Yes. So this is one. So it leads me to one other one. So I have it. This isn't the fully formed like blog post or whatever, but the next one I have. So this kind of, it does lead to this motivation and incentives part. And what I'm calling is this is just like, understand the game the other person is playing. So we're talking about like changing someone's behavior. So even if people aren't going to change, yes, we know that. Second, law one, people aren't going to change. And if you expect them to, you're going to have a bad time. So law number two is like, if you do want them to change, but you got to, or change somewhat, you have to understand the game they're playing, right? And so like what, like where you were saying, what motivates them or what is interesting to them. So
right.
Good examples, like I'm sure you have kids and you understand your kids, right? Like, and there's a, like I know, and we often joke, like I know my son's love language, we internally call it love language at the house. It's like, his is video games, right? So sure. Like, anything in and around video games, like we can motivate him. Mm. We use that as the carrot or the stick. Like, hey, we're taking away video game time. Like, hey, you didn't shut that. You keep leaving doors open in the house and left the garage door open again. Like, every time we catch that, you're going to lose like 2 minutes off of like tomorrow's screen time. Mm-hmm. You know, and happens? Behavior changes right quick, right? But it wasn't like, hey, I need you to shut the door. Hey, stop shutting the door. Hey, it is like once we flip that bit into something that aligned with the game that he's playing in his head is you know, video games. Obviously, there's a lot of other examples of those sort of like using that, the game he's playing, to kind of start a behavior change.
Yeah. And I think with kids, that's really obvious, especially when you have like 2-year-olds and things like that, where they're very, well, probably even past that too, where they're, you know, disobedient and, you know, not acting well, very obvious. But I think like even in the adult world too, right, of just trying to understand what motivates people to buy things or what motivates people to perform in certain ways. And I've always been fascinated with this, especially with, you know, consulting clients, to understand why a particular, you know, middle manager is acting in a certain way. And, you know, you just try and understand what's going on. And sometimes it's surprising, right? It's just, you know, simple things like looking good to their boss, or, you know, they have like a persona they want to maintain to the rest of the company, right? Of, you know, being a forward thinker, or maybe being a fact-based person, or, you know, some of these different prototypes, right? And obviously you don't know everything about people, and, you know, you're kind of trying to judge it from the outside, but I think it is helpful to try and think that way, especially if you're trying to sell things to people, right? It's like, hey, if you can give this tool to them to make them look good to their boss, like there's a certain category of people that's going to resonate really well with, because ultimately, like you said, people are going to do what they're motivated to do. They're not necessarily going to change who they are, or, you know, just because you educate them doesn't mean they're going to come to your way of thinking.
Right. Right. Which reminds me again, how we kind of came back on the last episode is saying how we ended up talking about switching your audience, right? The person that was potentially more motivated for larger test coverage and whatnot was not the QA person. It was potentially like the tech lead, or, you know, some other person that did care, or their job was more holistic around those things about what is the job, not necessarily how does they had a less. They had less risk in a personal vested, like a less, less risk personally for that. Right. And that's a big part, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think you're right, as the, obviously adults are probably the most complex, you know, we talk about children are easy. Our dog is super easy, right? Yeah. Food motivated, you know? But what's interesting is also seeing, you know, another good example is, my daughter, who's a bit older with softball, she's a softball player and she enjoys it. But what's interesting is it got a little more complex because there was, I don't know if I told this story before, but she's on a team and she's in middle school. So a lot of some of her friends from like other like elementary school are not the same anymore. But she joined the softball team a few years ago. None of them go to her school. They all go to like a different area school. But when she went to middle school, she became friends with some people that went to the same school a lot of the softball players went. But apparently the new friends that she made in middle school were not in that same clique with the softball players. And those softball players were, from what we understand, mean to her new friend. So it's she had this softball group. She had no feelings about the softball team because she didn't really know them before. But later in years, she found out a close friend of hers that she made later was like being bullied by in the past. It wasn't even like present. It was like past. But that has given her a lot of like I don't like them. I don't like my team. I don't like the people on my team. She still enjoys softball. But that started to conflict from this like an emotional pull on her, on feelings about her new friend and all these other things. If that makes any sense, it's just like, it's complex. So she, if taken in its purest, she enjoys playing softball. But then you add this other layer and all of a sudden she's kind of like dragging her feet about going, or just sort of seems to be having less energy or excitement about it. Now, it ended up well, like in terms of she's done the thing, she has gotten along better with her team over time, but it had been a hindrance. It was one of those things that potentially could have made or broke her enjoyment of softball.
Crazy. Yeah. I think there's a lot of different ways to like kind of analyze that too. And like, it's hard to always, I think, to get it right. Like to, you know, understand exactly like what's at play for a certain behavior. And I think there is kind of like a little shortcut that you can use sometimes for that, is to watch how other people do it. Like I think of like, for instance, like selling stuff. It's like, well, just look and see if there are other companies that are selling this particular thing, or like a similar category, or they're selling it in a similar way in an adjacent market. And you can kind of shortcut it a bit because they've already gone through all the hard work of, you know, nailing what sort of incentives and, you know, things need to be presented to be able to complete a sale or to be able to get to a particular person. And so you can use, you know, the hard work that other people have done, or, you know, copy ideas, right? Like you get, I remember we had one time.
Well, yeah, there's like patterns there. There's like, basically this has been proven, people will be willing to change for X, or that this isn't, they could see it the way this person positioned that sale or this product wasn't about change. It was about like doubling down on something the other person already believed in, right? There's like, how can I double down on what they already believe in, and how can I avoid the things they don't?
Exactly. Like I remember when I was working at a previous company, there was my boss got a little helicopter in the mail, and it was like one of those RC ones back when that was a new thing. And, you know, they gave it to him in the mail, but they didn't give him the controller. And they said, you know, get on a call with us and we'll send you the controller. And like, it's just, you know, a dumb little thing that like you kind of pick up on a number of those things. And it's like, hey, this is how you can, you know, get a little bit of an edge if you need to. Because I think the thing is, you don't want to be the person selling ice to you know, the Inuit, right? You want to be the person that's selling, you know, hot chocolate to the Inuit, right? It's not a, you don't want to go for the hard sells. Like, you want to make this easy.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, yeah. So that's kind of the closest thing to my second law, is like understanding the game they're playing. Right. Which leads to also like, you know, treat people how they want to be treated versus necessarily how you think. Right. Cause sometimes if I'm putting myself in the shoes of, you know, you say, oh, put yourself in their shoes.
Yeah.
Actually, no, and maybe that's right. I don't know. It's just like but how do you fully embody that? Right. And it's maybe you don't, and you never will, but you can start to guess, but then you got to gut check it by actually finding out. Right. So,
yeah, I think that's a good starting point. A good starting point is, how would you like to be felt, right? Or be treated. But right. I think sure. to extend that further is more about like, what do they actually care about? Right. I think maybe another good law that kind of lines up with this is, maybe it's not so much a law as a question, but it's what really are you selling? And so that's like, you know, you're not, you know, if you're selling marketing, let's say, you're not really selling, you know, the copy. What you're selling is that business owner's time, ability to have time, ability to, you know, look good in the community, you know, some of those kinds of things.
So that's more of like, we will say, you know, people don't change. We have understand the game people mm-hmm. are playing. And then this one's sort of more introspective on more of like, what is the true value that you're providing? Mm-hmm. Maybe that's like more of a general universal way of saying that, right?
Maybe you flip it and you say, people will buy true value. You know, what is that value or something? Butchering it as we go.
So I don't know. We could think of some more ones, probably not off the cuff, but I mean, even those three, let's go more into this other one. But like, I think you're right in terms of, and this, again, this isn't, I didn't mean for this all to just be about like how to convince people, how to make people buy things. Right. But just again, universal ones, like again, applying to parenting. Right. So it's like,
sure.
People don't change. And I like this. So people don't change, understand the game that other person is playing. And also just like, maybe this other one is like, gut check the reality of what you're, mm-hmm. where you're trying to drive them, right? Because maybe sometimes the answer might be like, actually, it's not that important, right? Like, I realize it's what I'm selling is more selfish. It's more about me than it is about them. Mm-hmm. And then that's probably the bad, you know, it's like someone could price something and it's like, well, I'm going to price this mug at $1,000. And it's sort of just like,
mm-hmm.
okay, you realize that that's really more self-serving. So there's really mm-hmm. not a good, strong, positive value exchange there where they're going to feel good about it and you're going to feel good about it.
Yeah. I think you made a good point there where you're talking about like, it's not all about convincing people. Because I think, you know, a cynical person listening to us talk might think we're just trying to manipulate people. But right. I think that a big part of this is just really trying to understand what people care about so that you can serve them, right? Like this is about making things good for them and for us. And, you know, part of that might be selling them things, and I think that's generally how we apply it in the terms of like the business sense, because I think like this stuff is really important if you want to have good friendships, if you want to be able to, you know, have good conversations with your prospects where they're not, you know, slamming the phone down at you, right? Because when you do these things well and with care and like as like a person with integrity, like you are providing good things to other people. Like I think of the book, like How to Make Friends and Influence People, right? And the title sounds really horrible, but it's a similar kind of things as this. It's like, you know, how do you make things easy, right? And things go well.
Right.
Sorry, that's a tangent.
I like that. What I'm kind of trying to get this third law down into is we're being like, who, if this person does change, like who does it really serve? And if mm-hmm. if it's just, it only serves you, then also you're going to have a bad time, like, you know, or just like, you got to look at yourself in the mirror sort of thing. Cause I think that's an important piece.
Right. That's the whole do unto others, you know?
Yeah. I also like your, you know, what's funny, and I've had this is sort of similar, right? Is like, you're right. There's that book is How to Win Friends and Influence People, right? Which again, depending on who's looking at it, like, you know that book, what that book provides, like, but also it seems kind of schemey, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Like, well, like the book literally is like, hey, maybe you shouldn't call people on a Sunday afternoon. It's like, they probably want to, you know, have some time off. And it's like, yeah, that's thoughtful.
But what I find interesting is there's all these, like, if you think about it, and I, again, another good example is, you know, the podcast, My First Million, right? Horrible name, like horrible name only because yes, that's sort of what they talk about. But like to the person that is not, I would say not a capitalist, I don't know, or just like would look at that title and it's like, that's like a get rich quick scheme. Like there's so much cynicism that is built into that. But at the same time, it's attracting the right person because you realize, you know, from writing hooks and writing titles, you put dollar things in there, people are interested. People are interested in money for good or for bad, right? Like one of my tweets, you know, started with, even though it made me feel schemey, it's like, it did, not really, just the way I wrote it, but it was just sort of like, you know, Referral Rock has brought in like, you know, this was, you know, like $6 million, like blah, 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 like here's out. But I know like that 6 million part, like catches an eyeball, catches interest, catches what, even though the rest was me telling about how to do founder sales, right? Like it was like very informative and very educational. And it's sort of like the hook, line and sinker type of thing. But what's interesting is like knowing that that game had to be played because knowing, again, the laws of like, there's probably all the laws of like what people will be interested in. It's like you name the top things, like, you know, money, love, sex, like what, all these, the sins, right? It's like you can take all the sins and people are interested because it's it's a human behavior, right? And you put any of those things at the forefront. And that's another probably just general law, like set of laws. People are going to be interested in these, you know, at least behind closed doors, if they're like, you know, no one else is watching. Cause then again, that crosses against another motivation. If someone saw me listening to my first million, what would they think of me? Right. And it's like,
Yeah. There's some deep waters there. I think we could probably talk about this for a couple hours.
Yeah. People and human behavior.
All right. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No, I think this was good. Again, it was sort of a wandering thought of change behavior. And kind of, I was just thinking more about after our last episode, a bit about this stuff and just thinking of, again, where we started with this was cross-functional examples. Like a lot of these ones could apply, you know, to kids, like, you know, to raising children, relationships with neighbors, hiring people, working on a team, all these, you know, everything is people oriented. So
maybe that's why a lot of like successful founders are like in their 40s. It's like, you know, they've had some time to experience life and, you know, figured some of these things out.
There's probably definitely some truth to that, is like they've seen these shows before in other iterations and have had reps, or hopefully they can transition some of their experiences in one area of life to another. I don't know.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, thank you, Josh.
Cool. All right, Nate. Talk to you later.
Bye. Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups, or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.